Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long. The Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, will join us about 4:40, a late practice. But again, looked as though Spencer Rattler had a really good day at practice. So Bob will have his Bobby's Notebook brought to you by Rouse's Markets, and he'll go over what he saw at practice today. Really the last, say, full practice that you'll be able to see. I think tomorrow is just sort of a little bit of a walkthrough before Saturday's game against the Denver Broncos, and you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 WWL, and we'll start our pregame coverage at 8 o'clock here on the Big 870 with First Take, and then Bobby and Steve will do countdown to kickoff at 10 o'clock. At 4:20 or a little bit afterwards, Glenn Gilbo will join us. He covers the LSU Fighting Tigers for Tiger Rag magazine, and so we'll have Gilbo's take on what's happening with the Tigers. And we heard certainly a lot about the Tigers in Clemson yesterday from Chris Lowe, senior writer at ESPN. And tomorrow at 5:20, John Summerall will join us about Tulane, the Green Wave, and hopefully we're going to get back to our Tulane Tuesdays with John, but Coach Summerall decided that he would join the show tomorrow at 5:20, and a little after 6 o'clock tomorrow. Man, I don't know if there's been a coach that has lasted as long in the college and pro football as Bobby April. I think it's 44 years in the NFL and major college football. Bobby will talk to us tomorrow. We had a great conversation today about it. Man, what has really changed? These long field goals, which has become routine, 55 and plus yard field goals, now a 70-yard field goal. And, you know, that's a new term now. You get past the 50-yard line, at the 50, hey, you're in range. Hey, get in there, kid, and go kick it. And also the punting game and how these guys are. You always want to get it inside the 20. Now they're trying to get it inside the 10. So, but today we'll have Glenn Gilbo, Bobby Hebert talk to us about the Saints practice sessions. And I want to tell everybody, today is National Radio Day, and WWL and Odyssey want to celebrate with you because radio has grown from airwaves to everywhere now, and we're so excited about it. 105 years ago, radio started in the United States, and today you can hear it you know, in your car, on your phone, on your smart device, on apps, everywhere. Radio is live, local, and it's for you. And so memories for me, listening to WWL, I was just a kid. I just turned 7 years old, and the Saints came into existence, 1967. Really, they got the franchise in 66, but first game, 67. My dad had two season tickets. So, man, I had an older brother. Charlie, he ripped me off. He got to see most of the games. But he was 5 years older, so, you know, you had to always kind of, you know, give him a, yeah, he got the little extra on that. So, first game of the year, the Saints are 5-1 in preseason. 5-1. And, you know, that's a lot of hope. Now, man, what expansion team playing like this? We didn't realize that mirage of preseason.
Oh, yeah.
So my mom has the radio on. At that time, you could not watch it on live TV. So my mom had the radio on. We listening to it. And the kickoff. And all we heard was a loud roar. Okay. Al Wester and Maury McGill, they couldn't say anything. They were doing the games back then. God bless him. Man, Maury McGill lasted, man, he so long at WWL. Just a great guy in life. Al Wester at one time was the voice of Notre Dame radio, and he was the voice of the Saints along with Maury. And you heard this loud boom come from that radio. And we sort of looked at one another, and then you heard – Al Wester make the call that John Gilliam on the opening kickoff had run 94 yards on a touchdown. And I'll never forget my mom look at me like, did they run that back all the way on the first play? I said, that's what he said. And then Maury McGill chimed in about it. But I don't know why that stuck in my mind. And we heard it on the Big 870 WWL. Because my mom, she was okay as a sports fan. She didn't, you know, it was great. She watched us if we played sports and stuff like that. But she was not a huge sports fan. But it was just the look on her face, like, they scored on the first play? I was like, yeah. And, you know, being a kid, man, you thought, hey, man, we rolling here. You know, I didn't realize for four more years that was the high point of the Saints.
Oh, yeah.
Until Dempsey kicked a 63-yard field goal to beat the Lions in 1970. But that moment, sports-wise, even more so than some of the other, you know, really good moments, that one stuck. And the Dempsey field goal we didn't hear. The Bees had got to the transmitter and knocked it out. All we heard is Dempsey's up to kick, and that was it. We had to wait like 10, 12 minutes before finally finding out that Dempsey had made the field goal. But listening on the Big 870 WWL to John Gilliam run it back, that opening kickoff, man, it's etched in my memory about listening to it. And Charlie, guess what? Next game, my dad brings me to the game. They play the Cleveland Browns, and they get swamped. I don't know if it was like 42 to nothing or 42 to 7, but I do remember, man, the Browns were really good back then. They had Leroy Kelly and Paul Warfield. They just skunked them. But I missed the sight. My brother and all saw it because it entered the end zone pretty close to where they were seated at. So sports memories that. The other one is in 05 after Katrina. And so it's a shortened version of the, you know, point after. And so Bobby was doing it. And then they would go, I think it's from 7 to midnight with it. And you were working with different people about, you know, not you do a little bit of sports, but they were talking about what was happening in the community. And it was to hear all the people calling in from all over the country, people that had evacuated and man, they lost everything, you know, losing with their homes, with the levees broken and everything else. And to hear people call in and just thank God you got WWL. That can inform us about what's happened. Because you know what happens in the national media. Okay, a story, it don't last for a long time. And then it's on to something else. But the fact that WWL 870 was there to inform everyone if they were in Houston or in Dallas. We were getting phone calls from the Dakotas. People, you know, they were working in that area, so they were there from all over the country. And to hear them saying, man, we're picking up WWL, and how great it is to hear the voice and to hear what was happening, you know, in New Orleans and in the neighboring spots about after Katrina. And it sort of tells you what, you know, this station with the power it has and what it did to get all that information out from people who were, they disconnected now. And after a week, okay, the national people, oh, we're looking for another story now. That's just the way it is. It was the news cycle. But to hear it every Sunday night, that people would call in and talk about it and their experiences if they stayed or if they left and what happened and how grateful they were to hear it here on the Big 870 WWL. And so, man, National Radio Day, those two memories come to mind real quick to me. We'll be back with Glenn Gilbo from Tiger Rag Magazine right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettigy along with Charlie Long. The Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, will join us a little after 4:40 this afternoon as he is leaving the Saints practices. On our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line from Tiger Rag Magazine, Tiger Rag Radio, Glenn Gilbo. Glenn, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon, bud.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Doing great. Gilbo, you hear it just like me. Man, you know, you got people a certain age that tell you, man, I hate this transfer portal stuff. And I'm like, okay, why you hate it so much? Because it's change? And they were like, yeah, keep your own players. My thing is, man, where would LSU be without the transfer portal where you could project, what, 8 to 9 starters that they got in the offseason out of the transfer portal? You look at how you redid your defensive line. your safeties, both starters, transfer portal. Delane, who arguably he's the best corner they got on the team right now, he's a starter for you. You got two guys that are vying for positions up front along the offensive line, Barrion Brown, Nick Anderson, Bauer Sharp, the tight end. Glenn, as much as we kind of grew up in a little bit different era, and I heard Coach O say this yesterday about him telling his sons that, hey, listen, you got to change with the times.
It's got me choked up too, Mike. I don't like the portal. But you're right. I mean, LSU finally kind of woke up. They really kind of ignored the portal as an institution, really. The first few years of it, they didn't really take it that seriously and didn't really get a lot of players from it. They were kind of reluctant to join it. But after they lost those three games in a row last year and lost their quarterback commitment from Michigan, all of a sudden they did a right turn and they put the money where their mouth is, and they were able to recruit some really good players. Man, to Marcus Cooley and A.J. Halsey, I think, are going to play right away at start at safety. You know, they're pretty good. There's some players on the D-line, obviously, offensive line, receiver. They're everywhere. So, yeah, if they win this year, it's going to be because of the recent portal additions they made.
Clinton, I think one of the things is we see this is all across college football for the most part. I know Clemson and Dabo Swinney didn't embrace it either at first. But when I heard Brian Kelly a few years back, and I told this to Charlie, he makes a comment about we're going to build through high school recruiting and, we'll pick and choose on transfer portal people. I told Charlie, man, come on. He's not living in the real world here. That's not what's going to happen. And you think about, Joe Burrow had finished at Ohio State. He had graduated. Him come here. Jaden Daniels, you got two Heisman Trophy guys. They didn't start at LSU. Okay, but they ended up here. So I do think as much as, we grew up in a different times, different era, that change is always going to happen. And so while Coach O was talking about his son's changing, my thing is I asked him, okay, are you going to change? He said, I have to if I get back in it. I have to.
Right, because he missed the portal. He's been out for almost 4 years, so he missed most of it. But, it is amazing. I remember in 23, Brian Kelly said that he looked at the portal as like topping off your gas tank. You already have the foundation of your team, and then you just kind of pick and choose maybe a half dozen guys from the portal to kind of accent what you already have. Well, he changed from that big time. But both ways can be done. I mean, Kirby Smart has avoided the portal for the most part with great success, but he might be changing a little bit too, like Dabo. I just think it kind of hurts the development of the players because they don't learn how to stick with something. In some cases it makes sense. Like Joe Burrow was the perfect transfer because the graduate transfer portal made a lot of sense. The players were older, more mature. They knew how to make decisions better, and they weren't just upset that they weren't playing. They put their mind on it, and Joe, graduated, and he had 2 years left. So that's really how it should be.
Glenn, that dog must have heard I'm coughing, so he's barking at me too.
That's dusty.
Man, God bless him. When you look at the positions that are the strongest for LSU, wouldn't you say right now, wide receiver and along the defensive line would be the two strongest for LSU today?
I would say wide receiver, maybe secondary, but D line is right there. Linebacker is probably the best returning position with Weeks and Perkins. I like every position except offensive line, and they may grow to be good by midseason, but I think it's going to be tough early on for them. But they're loaded everywhere but offensive line.
Your thoughts on the freshman Carius Kern, and we saw Will Campbell do it? We saw Emory Jones. They came in. Hey, I got it as a freshman. And we see it across college football today. A number of teams, really good teams, they're starting freshmen. Kelvin Banks Jr., who the Saints picked in round one, he was a starter as a freshman for Texas. Your thoughts on what you've been able to see, or maybe what people are telling you about Carius Kern? Because now it looks as though he has legitimately stepped up to the fact that he may be a starter game one.
Yeah, he may start at right tackle instead of Weston Davis, who they've had there for most of camp. And, this is the time when you make those changes and you make those judgments on who your players are at this point in August. I wrote about that today because Kelly admitted last year, like four games into the season, he was still figuring out his personnel. And that may be a hint as to why he hasn't won a season opener. You got to know who your guys are now. You know, you start to learn who it is in spring, and then you finalize it in August, and maybe by the second week after you play a tough opener like Clemson. But he's got to do a better job of knowing who his guys are early on, especially this season.
Glenn, in the past, Brian Kelly has talked about that his special teams and how we put great emphasis on it. Wherever I've been, put great emphasis on it. Early in the season for LSU, that has not been a strong point for Brian Kelly and LSU. I look at it a little bit different this year. Now, Rojas, I told this story, looked like he's on the pension plan. Like, he's been here for 10 years. He's already vested as a kicker. And I think he's a solid to good kicker in college football. It's the return men that jump out. Now, I'm interested to see, because I know under Coach Saban, Les Miles, and also Coach O, how young players got on the field early, play on special teams, make an impact there. And how that from a coverage standpoint on both punts and kicks. But you look at what they were able to bring in a guy like Barrion Brown, and you got Aaron Anderson, you got other guys that can do this. Glenn, it may really be a strength of this team. I hope it's a strength game one, because you cannot lose the special teams part of the game and beat Clemson on the road.
No, and it looks like they got a good punter in the transfer portal too, and Grant Chadwick, and Damian Ramos is a solid field goal kicker. But, you know, LSU should always have good return men, and for the most part they have. I mean, Barrion Brown would be a great returner. Xavion Thomas is one, along with Aaron Anderson, as you mentioned. And, you know, they should definitely take advantage of that. I mean, they had some good ones, you know, years ago with Teran Matthew and some others. But, that's the way to kind of steal a game or steal a possession or a touchdown. And, you know, you can't have silly mistakes, particularly on the road. And you know how they messed up their field goals with the holder last year. They had some trouble with that at A&M, if you remember. And that was key in that loss. So he had special teams issues in his first season, particularly, and made some staff changes there. So, you know, this year on paper, it looks like it could be the perfect storm if the O-line comes around.
Glenn, I wanted to go back to the defensive line and ask you about, you know, basically every reporter we've talked to has said the defensive MVP is maybe, if not been Mansoor Delane in the secondary, that on the defensive line interior with Bernard Gooden, the transfer from South Florida, and that's just one of the four transfers that they had brought in, going back to, as we had just mentioned, about the transfer portal, because you bring in three edge players as well, with Jamari Butler from Nebraska and Florida's Jack Pyburn and Florida State's Patrick Payton. You know, when we were talking with Chris Lowe yesterday, Glenn, he had mentioned another team that maybe LSU's trying to mold their defensive line after by building it through the portal, and that was 2024 Ole Miss, where they got Princely Omamielen from Florida and Walter Nolan from Texas A&M, and they had an awesome defensive line full of NFL talent. And so my question to you is, if you're looking at this LSU defensive line, are you kind of looking more at how the offensive line has performed and hasn't really performed up to standard versus the defensive line looking really, really good? How do you kind of balance that out, so to speak?
Well, that, you know, that if the glass is half full, that's it, because the defensive line has dominated LSU's offensive line through most of the practice sessions. my first thought was, well, the D-line's not that good, but maybe they are. I mean, they have brought in a lot of guys. Now the players Lane Kiffin brought in from the portal last year were certainly higher ranked than the ones they brought in here for LSU this season. But they're decently ranked. And I really like some of the returning linemen, too, like Dominic McKinley and Ahmad Bro and Gabriel Relaford are good, too. Those are returnees who – you know, if they're not starting, they're gonna play a lot. But you know, the roster is Kelly said it several times. I mean, it's deeper at every position than it's ever been, and that's all because of the portal. And you know, if the defense can come around and make significant improvement, which they really didn't do last year, they were better, but not that great. That'll help pave the way for a few weeks. You know, as the offensive line tries to get better.
Glenn, I'll get back to the offensive line, Breland Moore. I'm a big center guy. I think it's the second most difficult position to play in football. Quarterback would be one, but center. Because not only you got to do your job, you got to be the communicator up front, talk to the guards, you make all the calls. There's so much today differently than even 25 years ago or 15 years ago. So much of the blitzing's coming up the middle. So you got to make that call that somebody's got to pick up that guy coming right up the seam, right at your quarterback, to have a guy with experience like Moore. Because we saw last year, you know, man, DJ, he looked confused out there on who he was supposed to block in certain situations where they were using stunts up front. And the blitz was coming right at Nussmeier, right up the middle. To have Moore, I think, and it still is questionable on what you got across the board, but I know that guy can play, and he has started in college football before, which is a big plus.
Yeah, that is one blessing of the transfer portal, because LSU lost four starting offensive linemen from last season. And, you know, there's no way you could have a starter returning other than one, which was DJ Chester from last year's team, unless you go to the portal. And they got two starters from the portal, one Breland Moore, the center, and then the other one is Josh Thompson, who's at right guard. So that's really going to help with that transition. And, you know, Kelly is pretty well known for developing O-lines. And I mean, he walked into some good linemen when he came to LSU. Will Campbell was already there. But, I mean, he certainly didn't stunt their growth, because they had more. They had four drafted last year. That's the most they had since, like, the 1940s. And they had two go in the first three rounds for the first time ever. So, now these guys aren't ranked quite as high, but you know, I think as the season goes on, they're probably going to get better, and Breland Moore and Josh Thompson are going to be key.
You know, Glenn, before we let you run, just listening to Coach Kelly talk about the offensive line, where everybody is so down on them, he gave them a vote of confidence, but at the same time, you see what's happening this week in practice, where there's still multiple competitions going on. Mike had already brought up Carius Kern being thrown into it with Weston Davis at right tackle, but at left guard too. I mean, we don't really know who the Tigers' left guard is going to be. We mentioned DJ Chester. Paul Mabanga has been getting first team snaps this week as well. And I don't know if it's just him trying to enhance the competition of the offensive line, or if they really just don't know who that starting five is going to be. But the fact that, you know, we're about 10 days away from that season opener at Clemson, and there's still ongoing competitions, is that kind of nerve-wracking for you at all, or do you think it's just going to be kind of enhancing what that five will be once we get to that Clemson matchup?
Well, I think it's better to be jockeying them around now than once the season starts. You know, now you can find who they play. I think it's going to be Mavinga at left guard. But I do think they're going to play, you know, probably seven, maybe even eight guys, you know, so they can rotate. And DJ Chester has been working at three positions. He could be the utility guy if he doesn't start, and it doesn't sound like he's going to start. So, you know, they got some options there. It's just we're going to find out against Clemson, because it's probably the best front seven they're going to play all season, at least on paper. There's some high round draft prospects on that line. They haven't delivered in the past, but LSU might not play a better front than they do in this first week.
Glenn, you don't have to worry about depth, and I'm going to tell you why. injuries happen. And it's the most injured part of any college or pro team, offensive line. And so, okay, you're trying. I think this is part of Brian Kelly's deal, too. I know I got to get the young guys ready because I'm somewhere down the line, I'm going to have an injury or two to deal with, and I'm going to have to insert a guy that doesn't have a lot of experience up front along my offensive line, and I got to make it work. But, you know, I see it all across the board. If it's college or the pros, man, well, we got good depth. We got a sixth guy. We got a seventh guy. All of a sudden, the sixth and seventh guy are the starters. Then what happens? You got a guy that you got a redshirt freshman or a true freshman that's got to play. That's a big drop-off from an, you know, when you don't have any experience, never having played that spot before in a physical game, that is the biggest jump when you leave high school to go to college.
Yeah, and, I mean, all the more reason, particularly early in the season, I think LSU needs to set up the run with the pass and use misdirection and the element of surprise, because I don't think they can line up and just run the ball down their throat against many opponents on their schedule, because they play a bunch of good teams, even though I think Clemson's the best one. So they got to go with their strength with Nussmeier and the receivers and quick passes and screens. They have been working on a lot of screen passes, which makes a lot of sense because they got some good backs, you know. So I think they kind of have to use a finesse attack this year.
Hey, whatever works and gets you by and puts a W, that works for me. Gilbo, thanks so much for joining us, bud. Always appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
All righty, Glenn Gilbo with Tiger Rag Magazine. We'll be back, and when we come back, hopefully we're joined by the Cajun Cannon himself, Bobby Hebert, who went to practice today, and we'll have all his Bobby's notebook right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long. We have the Cajun Cannon with us shortly. Want to tell everybody tomorrow afternoon, 4 to 7, Steve Geller and I will be at the Treasure Chest Casino out in Kenner. So come on by and visit us. We'll have on with us John Summerall, head football coach at Tulane. Bobby April, longtime special teams coach, will also join us. Jeff Nowak will give us an update on the Saints practices. And then Friday, Steve and I will be in Thibodaux, Louisiana, not too far from where I live. We'll be at the Wellness Center of Thibodaux Regional Medical Center doing a remote there. Coach Tommy Ryback and Athletic Director Jonathan Terrell is already committed. They're going to come see us. And so also we'll have Scott Shanley on. Talk to us a little Saints football during that time frame. So tomorrow we'll be at Treasure Chest in Kenner, and then Friday afternoon we'll be at the Wellness Center of Thibodaux Regional Medical Center. Steve Geller and I are on both locations. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Closing up here, our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, WWL. Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. I need perspective. So perspective from Baton Rouge. You're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to offer a little bit on my perspective and watching the LSU O-line the last couple of years. First of all, Mike Denbrock had a tremendous influence on the development of the LSU offensive line. And while Gilbro talked about, you know, those guys being drafted relatively high last year, it wasn't, in my opinion, because they consistently performed at a high level. It was because they had talent and there were flashes of what those guys were capable of doing. I mean, last year when you see the kid from Monroe and he's in a two-point stance, I mean, to play O-line, man, you got to have a mentality. You got to have your hips down, your knees bent. You got to come off the line with a physical and an aggressive mentality. And I think our O-line coach has been a great recruiter and has done a great job of accumulating talent. But the technique, the communication, and the ability to teach the fundamentals of that position and get that group to get to work cohesively as a unit with a physical mentality is what we need. And Coach Kelly, yeah, he is involved a little, but he's more the CEO. It's right. Time for this O-line to step up, man, and establish a physical mentality and run the football. If we're going to win games in the SEC and compete for a national championship, We have to be able to run the football.
Amen, perspective. Man, you hit it right on the head of the nail. I'm just telling you, what you said is 2,000% right. I agree with you totally. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break.